Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world history in America as an independent press. Now, you know that, and I know. And he went on to say that there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. And I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of men, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings. We dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, he said that back in 1880. You know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program today and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, and so on. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and the New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to your website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Natural disasters. Hardly a day goes by that we don't pick up the newspaper or we're watching Katie Couric on the news and they're reporting on some disaster, a catastrophe. I just happened to pick up a few odd ones here. I'll share them with you. I'm getting catastrophed out. In fact, there's an overload, according to the charities around the world. There have been so many natural disasters and appeals for money to alleviate the suffering from the tsunami victims out in the Indian Ocean, you know, back here in the end of 2004, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Rita. These appeals for money for people that are the victims of these natural disasters is a natural outgrowth of empathy that we all share when we read of a story and somebody is being harmed, being hurt. I know when I see a picture of a little girl and she's got tears running down her face, her dirty little face, not just a little girl crying, it's a girl with a dirty face, and she's in Peru. And there's a sign down here, there's a little caption down here at the bottom, "Won't you help little Edna or little Irma or little Joni or whoever this little girl is? For only 50 cents a day, you can send your money to Post Office Box 287 in Tampa, Florida, and you can alleviate the suffering for only 50 cents a day. Sign up today." Well, I look at things like that, just like you and everybody else, and my heartstrings are pulled, and I say, yes, I would like to help that little child from a disaster. You know, maybe an earthquake occurred, or maybe a hurricane or a tornado came through. Then later on, we find out that our 50 cents a day that we sent, you know, to help little Irma or whoever it was, it was actually 90% of it went to fundraising, 10% went to feed starving children, and 90% of it went to this fundraising outfit in Tampa, Florida, someplace to build some guy a $2 or $3 million house down there. And I don't begrudge people that are in the charity business from living well. I mean, after all, you know, everybody has a desire in life to succeed, and they want to live well. But I just find that it's incongruous to me to be in the charity business living in a $2 million house. I don't like that. it would seem like to me that a guy that's got $2 million to spend on a house ought to have 50 cents to spend on a starving kid. You know, I'm not opposed to helping starving children. I'm just opposed to frauds and charlatans that are out here with their hands out using little children as the vehicle by which they lie, they steal, and they cheat you and I out of our money because we have a natural empathy for victims of disaster. Now, hardly a day goes by that we don't see a disaster somewhere in the world, and of course they tell us that this is just better reporting. And there's no doubt but what there's some better reporting going on, but there's a little bit more to it than that. In fact, I think there's a whole lot more to it. Because we're being told that these disasters are being caused by global warming, and that's because you and I are driving our cars up and down the highway. So it's our fault. You and I are the ones that are causing these hurricanes and floods and droughts and natural disasters because we use electricity and drive our cars. Now, that's the official line. It's your fault. It's my fault. Mayor Ray Nagin down in New Orleans made an observation one day. It didn't last long, but he made it one day. He said it appeared to him that Hurricane Katrina was the vengeance of God himself. And I thought when I read that, I said, you know, I think that guy hit the nail right on the head. That's really amazing for a politician. Next day, he retracted his statement, and he said, well, it was just the frustrations of the job that made me say that. Because, you see, it runs counter to the official government or the official party line. Because one of two things is going on here. Either Hurricane Katrina is a random chance event, like the floods of 1993. They said, hey, that's a once-in-a-century event. Well, we just had a second one-in-a-century event. There's a big flood going on up in the Midwest right now, up around St. Joseph, Missouri, and out into Kansas and Nebraska, and so on, down the up and down the Missouri River. It's the fourth largest flood in history. Fourth largest in history. And we've been setting records, and these records that we've been setting over here send us a signal. At least it sends me a signal. I don't know about the rest of you, but it sends me a signal. It says, hey, there's something going on here that hasn't been going on before. And hell, I might be dead wrong. Maybe it is my fault. Maybe my driving to town yesterday caused a drought someplace in the world. But I'm not fully persuaded that that's the case. In fact, I'm more persuaded that Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 are coming to pass, coming to fruition, right in front of our eyeballs, and we're kind of missing the story. Now, let me give you some of the story here. Natural catastrophes are increasing worldwide. Now, this is a Hal Lindsey story here. If you've heard the name Hal Lindsey, he's a writer. He writes about things like this. He says, according to a new report issued September 17th by the United Nations, they've got an ISDR, the United Nations Disaster Reduction Agency. Disaster Reduction Agency. I'm going to underline that. How the hell do you reduce disasters? I mean, come on, kids. That's like saying, I belong to the United Nations Disaster Reduction Agency, and our job is to reduce Hurricane Katrina's and Rita's and tsunamis in the Indian Ocean. We can't eliminate them, but we can reduce them. What the hell are we talking about here? You've got a major organization, an institution called the United Nations, and you've got a disaster reduction agency. We're going to reduce the wrath of God. We will take control. Anyway, it's called the United Nations Disaster Reduction Agency. There's been a global spike in worldwide natural catastrophes as well as those of man-made variety. All right, so I'm going to underline the man-made variety. So notice the word catastrophe in here. Now, I think that the word catastrophe and disaster are being overused. Joe Stalin made an observation one time. He said, when one man dies, it's a tragedy. I agree with him. Communist, no good that he was. I agree with him. When my dad died, it was a god-awful tragedy. But none of you people sent me any cards and said, well, gee, Mr. Gordon, we really feel real bad that your daddy died. You didn't even know it. You didn't care. You people out there, you didn't have any empathy for me. One man died, and it was a tragedy for everybody that knew it. Joe Stalin made that observation. He said, when a million men die, it's merely a statistic. A statistic. And you know, that's the truth. When 275,000 people died out in the Indian Ocean, to me, that's just a statistic, just a number. Then 100,000 people out in Kashmir, you know, suffered from an earthquake. I think it was the same year or the year after. And 100,000 people, they're either dead or homeless, and et cetera. And these numbers, you know, kind of boggle the mind. And then the Pakistani government and the American government and the United Nations and all these various groups get you, and they show you pictures of all these big airplanes flying in relief goods and blankets, and then they show you a little later on they're rebuilding these houses. I mean, here in this tsunami out in the Indian Ocean, whole cities were just leveled, just wiped out, kind of like New Orleans, you know, 23rd largest city in the United States. Now, we're not talking about Eureka, California. We're talking about the 23rd largest city in the country. Thousands of cities in the country. Here's number 23, wiped out. Wiped out. The population goes from 600,000 to 400,000. I think the population of New Orleans right now is around 200,000, something like that. Well, what are you going to do? All those people's houses have been destroyed, so they have to live somewhere, and there's no place for them to live, so they moved out. Many of them aren't coming back. They tell you very plainly, we're not coming back to New Orleans. And that's because rebuilding a city takes a long time. You know, it isn't something that you just do over the next week or 10 days, you know. Then I saw the other day that there was an F5 tornado. F5, that's the biggest tornado, they have what they call the Fuji scale. Biggest tornado you can get. Now, you see pictures of tornadoes every once in a while. You haven't seen a picture of an F5. This tornado was a mile wide at the base when it was on the ground. Hit a little town out in Kansas. Now, back about 20 years ago, down in Texas, Wichita Falls, Texas, a tornado hit that city, big town, Wichita Falls. It was a mile wide, and it leveled that town. I drove through there. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. You have to see it, you know, to actually believe it and to grasp it. Because, see, when you're watching the news at night, all they can do is take a picture of a particular location. So you see a shopping center wiped out. You don't drive mile after mile after mile and see everything wiped out. Now, that's a disaster, you know. That's a disaster for the people that are involved in it. It's a mere statistic to the rest of us. But what Lindsay is pointing out here is that these earthquakes, that these natural disasters, these tsunamis are occurring more frequently, and they're getting bigger. Now, until Wichita Falls, I'd never heard of a tornado that was a mile wide. I suppose they've been around for a while, you know, just because I hadn't heard about it didn't mean it didn't occur, but... Now, just because a hurricane occurred once and then it was a mile wide, how often do you see tornadoes of that size? And so right away somebody comes on, well, it's global warming. That's what it is. That's global warming. Well, is that really what it is, global warming? Or is there something else afoot? Maybe global warming is part of it, but maybe there's something more to it. And the purpose for taking a look at this is to ask yourself, well, could this happen to me? And if it does, what do I do to protect myself from it? Now, I was thinking about 1999. Remember when they were talking about Y2K? Y2K. And they came along and they said, well, now there's this great disaster that's looming. And so I went out and I started preparing for it. I spent a few bucks, you know, getting ready for this thing. And I listened to the, I read some books and I listened to the newscasters. And it's the story of the little boy that cried wolf. Have you ever heard of the end of the world? You know, if you're like me, you've been listening to preachers talk about the end of the world, the Great Tribulation. So you've been thinking about and waiting for it, and now you're an old man like I am, and then you say, well, listen, we've been waiting for this all of our lives. The Apostle Paul mentioned this. Time and again in the New Testament, he spoke out. He was expecting the second coming during his lifetime. He thought the Messiah was coming back, you know, in 5 years. People have been waiting for that. There was the great disappointment of 1843. There have been great disappointments in religious circles for the last 2,000 years waiting for the second coming. And in Matthew 24, which talks about the second coming, in fact, his disciples, this is the Messiah now, this is the Messiah's disciples, he came up to him one day and they said, hey, boss, tell us what's the story here on the end of the world. So he told him, he said, well, gather around, boys and girls, and listen up, because I'm going to tell you the story. And in Matthew 24, and Mark, he wrote it down. In Mark 13, he wrote down the end of the world story. And then Luke, he didn't want to be out then, so he wrote down the end of the world story. And then because Matthew, Mark, and Luke wrote it down, John didn't write anything about it. He said, oh, what the hell? I don't need to write about it. These other guys, they already wrote about it. And so there's three chapters in the New Testament. That's for you Christians now. See, you Christians, you can read that because that's the New Testament. A lot of times people tell me, hey, you fool, you dummy. The Ten Commandments are abolished and done away with. The Old Testament's been discarded, and we've just followed the New Testament. Well, okay, if you're going to follow the New Testament, here's the end of the world story. It's in Matthew 24. And it's quite a story, quite a story. In fact, in Matthew 24, he said that if I don't stop this, if I don't intervene in this process, no flesh would be saved alive. Now, I don't know if he meant that literally, there would be no human beings left alive, or if he meant even more literally, that there would be no bacteria left alive, there would be no cockroaches left alive, there would be no flesh, nothing living, no trees, no moss, no ferns, no, I don't know. I don't know whether he meant every living thing off the planet would be destroyed, or he was just referring to men in general, there'd be no flesh left alive. In any event, you've never seen anything like that. That's a pretty serious event when you're talking about no flesh left alive, no matter whether it's 100% death and all, no life forms at all, or you're talking about all mankind has been annihilated from off the planet. It's pretty serious stuff. Well, anyway, this guy, Hal Lindsay, he writes books along this line over here, and he said more than 254 million people were affected by natural disasters last year. 254 million. Well, that's almost the population of the United States. Nearly the entire population of the United States, worldwide now, let's take a country, that's a pretty good-sized country, you know, the United States. 254 million people, that's a big bunch. That's more people than live in France, more people than live in Germany, more people than live in England. That's more people than live in France, Germany, England combined. You know, that's a bunch of people out there. Natural disasters. We're not talking about war in Iraq, no, just natural disasters, just tornadoes and hurricanes, one thing or another. Last year, that's a threefold jump from 1990. So going back just 17 years to 1990, you take a look at natural disasters, and there's agencies of government. We're just talking about one right here. It's the United Nations Disaster Reduction Agency. They keep track of all of these. And they write them down. Every time one happens, they write it down. And when it happens, they write it down. They keep track of that. And then they follow this over time, you know, to get paid money for this. You know, guy makes his living. Like, what do you do for a living? I'm a natural disaster reduction man. I'm here to reduce natural disasters, and I keep track of them. I count them. Now, that's the interagency secretariat. That's the data that they reported. Now, according to statistics from the Center for Research on the Epidemiology of Disasters at the University of Louvain in Belgium, the long-term trend over the past decade shows a steady rise in victims. The UNISDR said in a statement, not only is the world globally facing more potential disasters, but increasing numbers of people are becoming vulnerable to the hazards. Well, that makes a lot of sense. As we progress along here, I'll show you that half the people of the United States, half, live within 30 miles of the seacoast. Half. In 1900, down in Florida, for instance, there's a number here. I forgot what the number was. Let's pick a number. 50,000 people, something like that, live along the seacoast. Today, it's phenomenal. There's a 5 million people or 2 million people that live in Florida along the seacoast. Well, naturally, when a hurricane comes ashore, that you're going to have more victims. You got more people. You got more victims, you got more people. Now, the world's population in my lifetime has increased from 2 billion to 6 billion, 2.5 billion in 1940 to about 6.5 billion people today. So it's gone up by three times. So the population is getting greater, and we're getting more and more of these natural disasters, and the natural disasters are getting bigger, nastier, and meaner, and of course that's typically, they tell us, caused by global warming. Let me throw another thought into your head here. Sunspots are becoming more frequent. Did you know that? I just read an article here the other day. Sunspots. Sunspots affect our weather down here on planet Earth. I'm not fully persuaded that my driving or using electricity is affecting sunspots on the sun. I'm not persuaded of that. And that affects our weather down here on planet Earth. Now, it would occur to me that if this is cyclical, and we're just the victims here of evolutionary change, it occurs from time to time. If it's cyclical, then it ought to occur with some kind of frequency. If, on the other hand, it isn't cyclical, what if it's being caused by God himself? I mean, just throw this, hang on a second, I'm going to throw this out to you. What if there is a God, and maybe you didn't evolve after all? Maybe there is a God out there. And maybe this God out there, maybe he's ticked off. We did something, made him mad, and he's sitting out there saying, you know, I'm going to tune these guys up down here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send some natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina and maybe a couple of earthquakes, and I'm going to punish these people down here. I notice that whenever there's one of these disasters that come over here, these preachers, they say, well, God's ways are higher than our ways, and we just don't know why. We just can't figure it out. Now, I read Matthew 24, and I read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which are supporting chapters. And there's a guy in here. Take a look at this one. Write this down. It's in Leviticus chapter 26. And you're going to see the personal pronoun I. I am going to do this to you. I am going to do that to you. I did this. I did that 20 times in that one chapter. 20 times this guy that calls himself God says, here's what I'm going to do to you. He gets a little more specific. He says, if you do this, I'm going to do that. And if you do that, then here's what I'm going to do. So I just read that, and I looked at that, and I said, oh, that sends me a signal. It says to me that if we didn't evolve from green algae, we got a bigger problem over here. We got some guy over here that's telling us that if we don't shape up and do this, that, or something else, then here's what he's going to do. And one of the things he's going to do over here is disasters, natural disasters. That's just one. Now, there's some other bigger, better, worser things coming. But I just thought I'd throw that one out. Now, Ray Nagin, you know, made that observation once, and he's the mayor of New Orleans. I mean, he's high-powered stuff. So if I come along and I throw that idea out there, remember, Mayor Nagin, he thought of it first. Disasters ranging from storms. Now, going back to Hal Lindsey, he says, disasters ranging from storms, earthquakes, and volcanoes to wildfires, droughts, and landslides killed some 83,000 people in 2003, compared with 53,000 deaths 13 years earlier. All right, so 30,000 more people are killed. Well, listen, you know, 100,000 people getting killed out of 6.5 billion people doesn't even register on the Richter scale. There's 100 million people added. Now, this is 100 million people added to the world's population every year. So what's 100,000 people getting killed? I mean, you know, 40,000 people just in the United States alone get killed in traffic accidents. We kill more people in car wrecks. More people die in car wrecks around the world than are dying from a natural disaster. So what's the big deal? But when car wrecks occur, all you're talking about is one or two or three or five people get killed. But when a natural disaster occurs and a volcano goes off and it releases a big flood and wipes out a city and kills 30,000 people all at one time, that makes bigger, juicier headlines. That gets your attention. And that's where money is made. Nope, I don't think that these people are really interested in reducing the death toll. I think they're interested in shocking our conscience and reporting an event so that it shocks us. And then they can come back and say, won't you send money to the Driver's Relief Fund Why 300,000 people were killed last year in automobile accidents, and they leave behind all these victims. And you should send your money today to Post Office Box 287, Tampa, Florida, to alleviate the crisis in families from traffic accidents. I mean, you know, come on, guys. Nobody's going to send money for something like that. But now, let's try this one. Hurricane Katrina. The city of New Orleans wiped out. But we're coming back. We're going to rebuild the city. Send your money today to Post Office Box. See, you're more likely to send your money to Post Office Box 283, you know, if the 23rd largest city's wiped out, or 275,000 people are wiped out in Indonesia, or 100,000 people are killed in an earthquake in Kashmir, because that's a big event. That's something that is palpable. That's something, you know, we can get right. Now, let's think about this one. Every year over in Iraq, they're killing 36,000 Iraqis. Now, they're killing 100 a day, and that's 36,000 a year. We don't even report on those statistics. See, we report two or three Americans getting killed every day. But 100 Iraqis getting killed every day doesn't even make the news. Did you know that? Now, evidently, Iraqis don't count. Three Americans are worth 100 Iraqis, easy. Did you know that there's 2 million Iraqi refugees? I mean, people that just packed up their cars and drove out of Iraq. I mean, just kind of like you. You know, you're living up in Montana. You just jump in the car and drive over to Canada. You're living down in Texas. You just pack up the wife and the kids in the car and drive across the border to Mexico. Hell, I'm leaving Texas. Can you picture that, 2 million? So you got 2 million refugees over there. I don't think they count. I don't think that's known as a natural disaster. Now, when 300,000 or 400,000 people down in New Orleans were displaced and they had to be removed from New Orleans all over the United States. Hell, they brought in some of them here to Ozark County. That's right, Ozark County, Missouri. We're not famous for much, but we took in some New Orleans refugees right here in our county. Three or four families were relocated here. And then, of course, they needed to be relocated. But here's my point. If Hurricane Katrina can cause such a turmoil over, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 people, don't you think 2 million people over in Iraq is a bigger, worser, badder event than New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina? I don't hear anybody getting excited about that or saying, hey, send your dollars to the Iraqi Refugee Fund at Post Office Box 287, Tampa, Florida. Nobody gives a rat's, you know what, for an Iraqi refugee. Hey, hang on a second here, talking about natural disasters. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, if you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and our archives. That can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. And I got to give you one more reminder here. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about disasters, natural disasters. Now, I don't blame Katie Couric or Brian Williams or anybody else. After all, they've got a job to do. They've got to fill up 30 minutes of time. Every night on the 6 o'clock news, they got a problem. They got 30 minutes over here. They got to be saying something. And they've got to be saying something that's interesting enough to keep you glued to your TV set for the express purpose of selling you pharmaceutical products from Pfizer and Merck and other companies that are selling you these drugs. The 6 o'clock news on CBS Evening News is in reality a format for selling drugs. And since you probably aren't interested enough in drugs that you would sit there and listen to a 30-minute infomercial, we have to mix in with that something that shocks your conscience. Like, did you know 3 Americans were killed in Iraq today? That's 3,218 that have been killed in Iraq since the war began, blah, blah, blah. You know. And so you're sitting there watching this, they call it news. It's actually not much in the way of news. You already knew that. And you don't need to go in and watch the news tonight to know that 3 Americans were killed today, now, do you? I mean, you already know that 3 Americans are being killed every day in the war in Iraq. So if you miss the CBS Evening News tonight, I mean, you're smart enough to figure out that, well, okay, I missed the news tonight, but three more Americans were killed. You want to remember 100 more Iraqis were also killed today. And another 50,000 Iraqis probably moved out of Iraq today, or something on that order. Now, getting back here to these natural disasters over here, remember, disasters ranging from storms, earthquakes, and volcanoes, and wildfires, droughts, and landslides killed 83,000 people in 2003, compared with about 53,000 13 years earlier. Now, in addition, storms and freak temperatures appear to be on the rise, with 337 natural disasters reported in 2003, up from 261 in 1990, the agency said. An onslaught of deadly hurricanes that have battered the southern United States support theories that such storms are occurring more frequently. John Harding, a program officer at the UNISDR, said, look at the number of hurricanes this year. It's hard to keep up with all the names. One year, I think it was in 2005, when they had the Hurricane Katrina, they went out past 26. They had to go to AA and BB and CC in order to come up with new names. Now, I don't know if that's natural. They report now that it is natural. I'm not so sure that it's natural. I think that it's a punishment. And I think that there is a God out there in heaven. I think that he's had a belly full. He's now starting to take action. That's what he said he was going to do. Just in case you hadn't heard this before, he said, you know, if you guys don't shape up down here, here's what I'm going to do. And I think that's what he's doing. Lindsay goes on to say, says, the scientific community tells us that the intensity and frequency of disasters are very likely to increase in the medium term due to climate change, and that increase may well be occurring at this stage. Okay, now I'm going to blame this on climate change. I'm going to blame it on God. But I'm going to underline climate change here so that as we progress along over here, we can pull the numbers together and pull the facts together. Now, the United Nations will hold a conference on disaster reduction in Kobe, Japan, itself hit by a devastating earthquake in 1995. It meets from January 18th to 22nd to explore the issue. Now, when Jesus was describing the signs that would herald his return, now here comes Jesus, Matthew 24, write that down, Matthew chapter 24. In verse 7, he said, by themselves, these aren't signs. They're merely restatements of the natural order of things, events common to the history of man. Ethnic wars and wars between kingdoms, famines, pestilences, and earthquakes all make their first appearance in the book of Genesis. But Jesus described these things using a very specific metaphor. He used the metaphor of that of a woman in child labor. And he said in verse 8, all of these are the beginning of sorrows. And Jesus predicted that all of these events would develop in concert together in the same time frame, and they would all increase in frequency and in intensity. All right, now let's pay attention here. Hal Lindsey. I think Mr. Lindsey might be on something here. He and Mayor Ragnakin, I think they've hit a chord here. Now, the word rendered sorrows is Odin, O-D-I-N, in the original Greek, which means the pain of childbirth or birth pangs. Every parent who has ever lived could instantly grasp the meaning of this metaphor. That's why Jesus chose that metaphor. As the birth of a child approaches, the mother begins to experience labor pains, which, having once begun, continue to increase in both frequency and intensity as the moment of birth approaches. Prospective parents in Jesus' day did exactly what we do today. They timed the interval between the contractions. And it was a carefully chosen metaphor designed to resonate with everybody everywhere. Everybody in all cultures and in all generations. But to the generation to whom these signs were addressed, the meaning would be unmistakable. Since 1948, there has been a discernible uptick in the frequency of all of these catastrophic events. And it was discernible, but it was also deniable. And so until recently, it was framed as an issue of proponents of the global warming theory versus the opponents of the global warming theory. Each side would produce its own statistics to disprove the other side, and the battle rages on. Is global warming responsible for the increasing violent global weather patterns or not? Well, I think now, scientifically, that the issue of is the Earth getting warmer has now been settled. I think the world is getting warmer. In fact, up in the ice pack in the North Pole, it's decreased by 1/3, and the ice cap down in Antarctica is melting off. Now, that, I think, is pretty scientific. I think that the conflict now, is there global warming or is there not global warming, has now been settled. There is global warming. Now, question two. What is causing this global warming? Is it the sunspot activity on the sun? Or is it the power plants burning coal and gasoline here on planet Earth? Or is it a combination of the two? A combination of the two. Is this being orchestrated by random chance, or is this being orchestrated by God Almighty himself? Okay. Now, I'm of the opinion, and just my opinion, along with Hal Lindsey, this is being choreographed. It's being orchestrated by God himself. And it fits in with Bible prophecy. Now, keep in mind that Bible prophecy is not a good guess. Think about it now for a minute. Jean Dixon. Remember this Jean Dixon? She's quoted quite often. I don't know who in hell this Jean Dixon is. She's been predicting that California is going to fall into the ocean, predicting an asteroid is going to strike the Earth. You go to the supermarket, and Jean Dixon predicts. Now, Jean Dixon has never predicted anything that's ever happened, except maybe her cat's going to have kittens, but we don't know exactly when. As long as I can remember. I mean, I've been walking out through the supermarket checkout stands. Jean Dixon this, and Jean Dixon says something else. And I said, oh, who the hell is Jean Dixon? Moses, I heard of him. Daniel, I heard of him, but, this is Jean Dixon. And Jean Dixon says California's going to slide into the ocean. California, last time I heard, was still there. Nothing's happened. But anyway, the National Enquirer and all these little papers, they're always out here trying to predict the future, So they got all these predictions, and people, they lap it up. They love it. I don't think any of it ever happens, but then they lap it up. And it goes to this problem I mentioned earlier here called the crying wolf syndrome. You keep crying wolf, and pretty soon people don't want to listen to anymore. And that's the way they are with prophecy. They've been predicting, the second coming, and predicting, all these religious guys, they're predicting, the second coming over here. Until all of us now become totally jaded, we're sitting over here saying, oh, come on, we've heard this crap, for 40, 50, 60 years, I'm tired of listening to them. They do this, of course, with hurricanes. they tell you, well, this hurricane is coming, and about four times out of five, they're wrong. The hurricane misses the intended target, doesn't reach landfall, it veers off and goes up the Atlantic coast or something like that. And so people, they get really bummed out. And so then they stay in New Orleans, and when the hurricane comes, it wipes them out. And then they get real mad, and they say, well, how come we weren't told? Kind of like watching television. How come we weren't told? How come we didn't get the advance notice that this program was going to be on at 7 o'clock on next Wednesday? Well, the hurricane prediction isn't exactly an exact science, and neither are tornadoes. And they just kind of come, and they just kind of go. Now, we have some tornado and hurricane warning system. And then when we hear these warnings over here, we kind of turn them off. In fact, a lot of people, they get kind of cocky. They say, well, I'm going to ride this out. We're going to stay right here. We're going to ride this hurricane out. And then when they go interview those people, well, I'll never do that again. The next time I hear about a hurricane coming, I'm gonna evacuate. But they get the younger you are, the cockier you get. When you're 19, you have eternal life. And by the time you get to be about 30, you wake up to the fact that, well, maybe life isn't exactly eternal. Maybe there is finality here somewhere. Now, the word rendered sorrows is called Odin. Remember that? Talking about childbirth. And that was the example that Jesus gave us. Now, last year, astronomers were at a loss to explain why 9 major solar eruptions occurred during a 2-week period in October during the middle of a 9-year solar minimum season. All right, now let's pause right there. I'm going to underline the minimum season. Last year, astronomers, scientists, were at a loss to explain why 9 major solar eruptions occurred. Now, here's the sun. See, this guy's just watched that sun all the time, paid for out of taxpayer money, so that you know where your taxpayer dollars are going. There are scientists that just sit around watching solar flares on the sun. They get paid for that, and they write those down. Now, there are minimum, there are cycles on the sun. They've been watching this for a long time, and it works in 7-year cycles. There'll be 7 years, and there'll be an increase in solar activity, and then there'll be a decrease. During the decrease cycle, there were 9 major solar eruptions. Now, these solar eruptions, they affect the weather here on planet Earth, in case you didn't know that. They've been watching that, too. Now, politically, that doesn't play well in Poughkeepsie, because, if we say, well, listen, there's solar flares, and that's affecting the weather, and that's causing global warming, you can't get people motivated to take action. You can't get people to change from Freon to some other coolant in their car engines. I mean, that's just the way life is. If you want to sell somebody something, you got to create an event like Pearl Harbor. If you want to sell World War II, you got to have an event like Pearl Harbor. If you want to sell the war on terror, you got to have an event like 9/11. And so when these events transpired, now if you want to sell people on the idea of helping refugees and sending your money to Post Office Box 257 in Tampa, Florida, you got to have a hurricane, you got to have an earthquake, you got to have something that kills a lot of people. Now, nobody is interested, I mentioned this a little earlier, nobody's interested in the number of people being killed, but it's the drama of how those people met their end. So in the tsunami in 2004, remember the day after Christmas? out in the Indian Ocean, had this 9 earthquake, you know, on the Richter scale, one of the biggest ones in recorded history. Causes this big tidal wave. Well, comes in across the city probably bigger than New Orleans, wipes it out, just cleans it up, kills about 270,000 people, quarter of a million people, killed quarter of a million people. And now that got us, you know, then President Bush, ex-President Bush, and ex-President Clinton, they went over there and they generate, hey, send your money to post office box on. So people get really excited about that. And as a result of that, that makes money. Solar flares, that doesn't make any money. You know, if it came along and said, hey, listen, you know, these events transpire because of cycles on the sun. You know, or 150,000 people a year getting killed in automobile accidents worldwide, send your money to post office box 287. You know, nobody's going to listen to that. Now, the solar activity, until 2012 or later. Instead, scientists declared that it was that the most turbulent periods of solar activity since 1940. That's what's occurring here today. Now, there's been little or no solar activity until 2012. That's what they were predicting. But now, instead, the scientists have declared that the most turbulent periods of solar activity since the 1940s are occurring right now. Richard Wilson, he's NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies and Columbia University's Earth Institute, authored a study for the Goddard Space Institute. And he concluded that historical records of solar activity indicate that solar radiation has been increasing since the late 19th century. If a trend comparable to the one found in this study persisted throughout the 20th century, it would have provided a significant component of the global warming, which the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports to have occurred over the past 100 years. You get that? They haven't counted that in. And that's because there's a political agenda here. And in the political agenda, we've got to have global warming, and we've got to have global warming caused by power plants, caused by automobiles, so that we can make those kinds of changes, so that we can milk the taxpaying public out of more money. That's what the bottom line is. Now, in the process of doing that, we're missing the real event. The real event are solar flares. The real event is Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Revelation 6, 17, and 18. That's where the big bad wolf is. The big bad wolf is in Bible prophecy and the second coming. How soon is the second coming? I get asked that all the time. People, they write me emails and they say, what's your best guesstimate? What's your best guess for the second coming? And so I always refer them to Matthew 24, where the Messiah said that no one knows. This is Jesus speaking now, kids. Jesus said he didn't know when the second coming was going to occur. He said there is a guy that knows. And that guy is God the Father, and he's keeping a pretty tight lip on that event, that date and time. He says he ain't telling. Now, if God the Father ain't even telling God the Son when that event's going to occur, why do you people send me emails and ask me, well, what do you think, Mr. Gordon? When do you think Jesus is coming back? When Jesus himself said, I don't know, people write me letters and say, hey, Gordon, when's he coming back? Now, there's no shortage of preachers out there that'll tell you. I mean, they'll tell you 1843. They'll tell you 1914. Well, 1843 came and 1843 went and it didn't happen. And then 1914 came and it went and it didn't happen. And there have been numerous preachers saying, well, he's coming this year or next year or the year after. And I don't know. These guys evidently don't read the Bible. Because if they had read the Bible, and specifically Matthew 24, the guy who's the object of the second coming. You know, picture this. It's kind of like General MacArthur says, I shall return. But he doesn't know exactly when. And he doesn't really want to tell the Japanese exactly when he's going to return. And besides that, he's not even the guy that's in charge of the return. That's done by the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Washington, D.C. Now, General MacArthur could say, I shall return. But if you'd ask him, when are you coming back? Generally, I don't know. I don't know. But when I get my marching orders, I'll be back. Well, that's what Jesus said. He said, well, I'm coming back, but I don't know exactly when. Now, a report in the July Science section of the New York Times predicts the Earth is perhaps 150 years into the collapse of the Earth's magnetic field. The European Union has even approved the development of a trio of new satellites called Swarm. The mission of Swarm is to monitor the collapsing magnetic field to help scientists forecast when the compass needles will start pointing south. Now, this magnetic field is necessary, and it's a part and parcel with what goes on here on planet Earth. What it has to do with the weather, I don't know. I'm not sure anybody else does. But it is decreasing, has been. We've been measuring it now since 1837. We've been measuring the magnetic field. It's getting weaker and weaker. I'm sure that it has some effect on us. I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but I'm sure it's probably pretty negative. Now, a group of leading space scientists from NASA and the universities in the United States, Europe, and Russia, and Australia already sent a letter pleading with the Australian government to rejoin the asteroid search 7 years after that country dropped out. Asteroid search? What the hell is that all about? Well, it's a report in the July Science section of the New York Times. According to them, the odds of a catastrophic asteroid strike on planet Earth sometime in the next century are about 1 in 5,000. One in 5,000. That's like my weatherman over here. He says, well, the chances of rain tomorrow are 50-50. Hell, he can never go wrong. Just picture this. If it rains tomorrow, he says, well, I told you a 50% chance of rain. If it doesn't rain, well, I told you a 50% chance it wouldn't rain. I mean, the weatherman over here has a prophet, a predictor of future events over here is about as useless as, you know, those things, you know, on a boar hog. Of what value is it? And so they come along and they say, well, there's about a 1 in 5,000 chance that an asteroid's going to hit the Earth. Well, asteroids have hit the Earth in the past, probably during Noah's flood. And as a result of that, we can see that there have been some very major changes here on planet Earth. And the guy says, well, there's a 1 in 5,000. Well, if an asteroid hits, he says, well, see, I told you. And if an asteroid doesn't hit, well, I told you that there wasn't a big chance that it was going to hit. Now, the United Nations claims that we're witnessing, or that we are witnessing, and on an increasing scale in both frequency and intensity, earthquakes, famines, wars, and pestilence. NASA continues to document the unexpected and unsettling changes in the sun's solar flare cycles. The European Union is monitoring the collapse of the Earth's magnetic fields, while scientists from all countries are urgently searching the stars for killer asteroids. Now, meanwhile, up and down the Atlantic seaboard, forecasters continue to worry about running out of letters in the alphabet before we run out of hurricanes this year. Well, Jesus predicted these kinds of signs would begin to occur just before his return. Just before his return. And there will be signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars, and on the earth, the distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. Hey, I think that there's something bigger, badder coming. Hal Lindsey thinks so. We'll take it up right there next time, talking about natural disasters, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Hey, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to their homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.